It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Wisconsin Public Radio is talking to people. Specifically, our Beyond the Ballot election series is tracking down 500 people to find out what issues are driving people to the polls. Surprise, surprise, education is one of those issues. Bridget Bowden is the chief questioner and answer keeper for Beyond the Ballot. Her official title is Special Projects Reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio, where she is project managing the Beyond the Ballot series. Bridget, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, excuse me, since we last checked in, what has Beyond the Ballot been working on?
Yeah, so since our last check-in, summer festival season has really been ramping up.
So you've been heading out to the festivals.
Yes, your listeners may have seen us out at the Blue Ox Festival. We've been to...
This is a really tough job you have.
I know. It's rough.
Right.
But we've been out talking to people and hopefully getting some good answers.
And so what is the role... Take us back here so we can remind people. What is the role of Beyond the Ballot? What are you guys trying to do here?
So Beyond the Ballot is an initiative that the news department is taking on this year, where we are going to interview 500 people and then use their answers to inform our election coverage this year. So we're asking everybody the same 6 questions, so it's kind of standard.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully we'll find out some good stuff about what people really care about.
You are finding out some good stuff. You're probably a third of the way through the finding people and talking to people at this moment, right?
Yeah, we just hit 150 interviews.
Whoa.
So we're well on our way.
As you talk to Wisconsinites about what's happening in their communities, what are they saying about this election?
So they're saying a lot of things. People care about a lot of different topics, but as you mentioned, education has mm-hmm. come up a bunch. So I brought a few clips to play today.
Sure.
Our first is from Amber Hatcher DeSayu, and she's from Onalaska. And she says that education is actually her top issue this election season.
I think for me, the most important thing is anything with education and what we're doing to keep our kids safe at school. If we're not keeping our kids safe and doing what we need to do to protect them, our future's a loss anyways, because they won't be here. So anything that the candidates are pushing, and for me, it's not so much who is running, it's what they're running for, what they're supporting. I don't care what their background is, left wing, right wing, I want to know what they're standing for. Whoever's going to protect my kids in school and whoever's going to do what's best for them, get our teachers the funding they need, get our teachers what they need to teach our kids. That's the most important thing to me.
So she's talking about safety. Is she talking more about gun issues or is she talking more about what kids are learning in school?
I think she's talking about both. I think that she cares very deeply about school safety, but also things like funding. Do teachers have enough money and supplies to provide the kids with what they need?
So you talked to an elementary school teacher. You actually talked to a teacher. Tell me about him.
Yes. So this is Jeff David, and he lives in Mineral Point, and he's an elementary school music teacher.
Yeah, my favorite.
Yeah. And so he said that he wonders what things were like for teachers before Act 10.
I've thought a lot about this. I came into education like about a year and a half after Act 10 came out. I came into education in 2011. So I saw the protests happen in Madison against it, and I read about it. So I guess I never really experienced what kind of opportunities I could have had as a professional teaching pre-Act 10.
We are talking with Bridget Bowden about our Beyond the Ballot series. Bridget and her team have been going around talking to people in Wisconsin about what is important to them. And today we're focusing on education. So does he talk to people in his school that he teaches with who may have been around before Act 10? Why does he have that question, I guess?
Yeah, I've actually met a few teachers who are in this situation who, came into teaching after Act 10, and it's a pretty interesting perspective because, they hear about things that were in place, certain benefits before Act 10, and when I ask them about it, they're like, well, I don't know if it's a good or bad thing because I wasn't around before.
Right,
then,
and so what I have is pretty good, actually, so it doesn't really matter. Is that kind of their view of things?
It depends person to person.
Interesting. So you talked to another teacher in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. Tell me about her.
Yes. So this is Nikki Clymer, and she lives in Ellsworth, Wisconsin, but she actually teaches across the border in Minnesota.
Oh.
But her own kids go to school in Wisconsin. So it's kind of cross-border situation. And she says she's worried about teachers in this state in Wisconsin.
I think the teachers are up against a lot right now. They don't have a lot of protection. They don't have a labor union. They don't have the right to strike. So I think that there's a lot of big issues with education, and that, of course, shift with our governor, Scott Walker. And we're seeing the, you know, effect all around the country. There's been lots of strikes this past year. And this is something that, you know, needs to be addressed.
So does she think that teachers really need to strike? Are there issues that she thinks that are happening here in Wisconsin that aren't happening in Minnesota? Or is this just kind of like their rights are being pushed down and I have more rights in Minnesota?
Yeah, I think she's saying that teachers here don't have as many rights as they do across the border where she teaches. And that is a concern to her.
And she feels safer teaching in Minnesota. You know, clearly this is she feels safer in her job than she would if she were teaching in Wisconsin.
Or she at least feels like she's getting a better deal.
Yeah. Do you think education is one of the most important conversations happening during this election season? Why or why not? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be talking about education with three different guests throughout this hour. Bridget Bowden from Beyond the Ballot, tell us about this next person. You talked to another teacher who teaches in Milwaukee, which is kind of a different zone here than the rest of the state.
Sure, yeah. So this is Simeon Robinson. He is a teacher in the Milwaukee Public School District, like you said. And his top issue this election season is funding for youth programs in inner city areas. And that would include funding for programs through schools.
With all the budget cuts, like, we're losing programs like music, losing programs like art, gym, and a lot of the kids, that's kind of like how they express themselves educationally, is maybe through art or maybe through music, you know. And if we're having elected officials vote on cutting budgets that take those things out of schools, then I can honestly say I don't think it's fair, and I don't know if they are representing us, the people that's in office now. But you know, I'm sure they all have good intentions. I mean, I'm sure the money has to go somewhere, you know, but I want to see it more so back invested in our communities to get kids to brighten their horizons and not just think basketball or not just think sports to make it out. But there's other ways to make money, you know, by using your artistic abilities, and that's kind of being taken away right now.
So I think it's interesting that we start out with a music teacher and we end with a teacher saying we need more music and art.
Yeah, exactly.
So education seems like this big picture issue. How are you tackling the nuances when you find out what people say? Is education a top priority? Is it their second, their third?
You know, we haven't really been tallying what are the most common answers. Obviously, there are trends, but a lot of people will bring up more than one issue. It's hard for them to identify a top issue, but education is certainly towards the top. And so once we do these interviews and we identify trends, that's when we're able to, you know, kind of put them together and bring in expert voices. And that is how we'll be bringing you stories this year.
Okay, so you're going out to festivals this summer and other places.
Other
also.
Places, for sure.
And you're talking to people. You're putting microphones in front of people's faces. And then you're collecting a lot of tape,
yes.
I'm assuming. What are you going to do with this tape?
So a few different things. We'll obviously have it here on both of our radio networks. You'll hear it on our newscasts and on our talk shows. It's also online. We have a website, WPR.org/ballot, where we're featuring many of the people who we're interviewing.
And then there's going to be like a big archive of tape. Is that going to be accessible? Is the whole archive going to be accessible at some point?
That's a great question. You know, maybe that's something we should consider.
You're collecting a lot of tape.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Something with this. If people want to be part of Beyond the Ballot, tell us what to do. You said WPR.org/ballot.
Correct.
But what if somebody wants you to come to their event? What do they do?
So we have an email address. It is beyondtheballot@WPR.org. And also, if people just want to answer our questions, weigh in with what's important to them, we have a hotline where they can leave us a message that we can use on air. So that's 877-782-8942 is our hotline number.
877-782-8942.
Correct.
Or if you can, you can answer the questions at WPR.org/ballot.
Yep.
Thank you, Bridget Bowden, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Bridget is Special Projects Coordinator at WPR, and she is running the Beyond the Ballot series. To get involved, do what we just said. Go to WPR.org/ballot. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Well, now that we know that Wisconsinites think education is one of the bigger issues this election season, we're going to take a look at how it's playing out in the election. Governor Scott Walker this weekend called himself the education governor. Democrats countered by pointing out that he cut hundreds of millions of dollars from state education budgets. But his current budget increases education spending, so does that earn him the title? Especially against school superintendent Tony Evers, who happens to be one of the front runners on the Democratic side. Molly Beck joins us now. She is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who covers state government and politics. Molly, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to meet you. I've been hearing
Likewise.
A lot about you. talk to me about Scott Walker's education governor tweets. How has education become the focus of his third term?
So I would actually say that the focus on education for him in this race began last year when he released his most recent state budget. That state budget included a huge increase for education funding, specifically for public schools. And when that happened, it kind of signaled to at least the press corps that maybe he was thinking about running for a third term because, as you said earlier, that in recent polling, education, especially funding for public education, has been proven to be something that's important in polls.
Does it seem to people that this is just like pandering? Like Scott Walker just turned around and went, "Oh my God, it's an election. People care about education. I'll throw some money at that."
Well, Democrats would say that, of course. But if you talk to Governor Walker, he says, "You know, we had some tough budgets early on." Since I was elected, and he calls it a reform dividend, and he says that, you know, we have a lot of money now, so I'm going to use that money and put it into schools.
So what are Democratic gubernatorial candidates saying in response to his tweets?
So it's especially State Superintendent Tony Evers has taken this claim of Governor Walker's that he's an quote education governor. He's taken that and criticized it heavily. He's in a position to do so because he oversees public schools and has since 2009 and has been on, you could say, the opposite end of discussions in budget years about education funding. And he would say that Walker has not put public schools in a priority position in those discussions until this last budget. Tony Evers' position, and you'll hear this from other Democratic candidates in the governor's race, will say that this is a reversal from what Governor Walker has cared about in previous years, which Governor Walker has expanded and pushed for the expansion of private school vouchers. Mm. That's a big criticism on the Democratic side, and now there's a focus on public schools.
Tony Evers was right in the thick of things when Act 10 was decided. Was he vocal in opposing Walker back then?
He was. He signed the recall petition. He was, you know, on the side of teachers during the Act 10 protests. He has worked with Walker on some education initiatives since then, and I think you might hear some criticisms from his primary opponents about that. He certainly was against Act 10, and he has been critical of Act 10 since then, but he's also not come out and said that he would actively seek to eliminate Act 10 if he were elected governor.
So talk to me about what the other candidates are saying about what Governor Walker tweeted.
I actually haven't seen a whole lot of variation in the criticism of it. I think generally the Democratic talking point is that, the title of education governor is not something that he deserves, but Governor Walker and Republicans say that he absolutely deserves it because, this last budget did put a lot of money for public schools, but also prior to that, he might not have been considered, a public school advocate's best friend, but he did care about education. Act 10 is related to education, and private school vouchers are too.
Interesting. When Evers first came forward, he was talking about, the governor had talked about, the budget gap was actually only, a few million dollars, whereas Evers was saying that the budget gap for that after Act 10 was $1 billion. Where do those numbers square?
Well, I think after Act 10 and Walker's first budget, he cut nearly $800 million from public school funding. And that was made up in part by local school boards being able to, lower their costs for pension and health care costs because of what Act 10 did. It's not quite $1 billion, but it did cut it by near that.
So $800 million was cut out, forcing school districts to cut pensions and perhaps cut programs like music programs and what have you. Would that be a correct way to say it?
Well, it depends how the school board responded to Act 10. Many school boards did is they asked their teachers to, contribute more toward those costs. And that's where the savings comes in for school districts. But of course, if you talk to teachers, that was not a savings for them.
The savings are on their backs.
Right.
This has been my introductory conversation with Molly Beck. She's the state capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I'm sure we're going to be talking again this election season, Molly.
I hope so.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We're continuing to look at how education is playing out in Wisconsin's gubernatorial election, and we're taking your calls, 1-800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. A new poll by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which advocates for school choice programs like education savings accounts and charter schools, details what people think about issues related to choice. The report also details how the words pollsters choose affects the way people see an issue. Will Flanders is the research director at the Institute. He joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. Will, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So what was the goal of this polling?
So as you've established in your previous segments, I think, education is a major issue in the upcoming election. It's a major issue in Wisconsin throughout the year and over time. And we just wanted to get a lay of the land and see what the thoughts of the public were as we head into the upcoming election season about school choice and other issues in education reform.
And so lift the curtain a little bit. The methodology behind this poll, how many people did you talk to? What questions were you asking?
So we contracted with a national surveying firm. We contacted 1,500 Wisconsin adults, so folks over the age of 18, giving us a margin of error of about 2.5%. So a pretty large poll, you know, trying to get a cross section of the entire state and get public opinion overall. And the, in terms of the questions we asked a wide variety of questions about education reform. So Wisconsin has one of the oldest school voucher programs in the country. We asked some questions about people's feelings towards vouchers in general. We also asked about charter schools and, as you mentioned, education savings accounts, which are kind of viewed as the next version of school choice or the way that school the school choice movement is moving towards.
Tell me the difference between vouchers and choice, vouchers and ESAs, education savings accounts.
So that's a very good question. Vouchers are a stipend that only goes to an individual school. So it's a state payment to a particular school to fund tuition. Generally, you know, it's at a private school. ESAs give families a lot more control over how their money is spent. So you could maybe think of it as sort of a debit card that's used for educational services. It's at least been done through a debit card in other states. Some places it's also been a reimbursement. But it allows parents and families to sort of select the education services that they feel are best for their child. So you might take a class at a private school. You might supplement that with an online course or some tutoring, basically to create a set of education services that seem to be the best for the individual student.
So the way you're describing it, ESAs seem like they're more for homeschool students.
So potentially they could be for homeschool students, though that's an issue in and of itself. Sometimes homeschool families are a little leery of being involved in these public processes at all. But they can also be used for, you know, classes at private schools, maybe supplement services with a local university, not necessarily just for homeschooling, but really for sort of a wide variety of educational services from a big menu of options.
We are talking about education this hour. We are taking your calls. What do you think of school choice? What do you think of Act 10, the landmark legislation passed by the Walker administration affecting education? Do you think that Wisconsin spends too much, too little, or just about the right amount per student? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Will Flanders, I want to get back to the methodology here. You said that that you contacted 1,500 adults in Wisconsin. Did you contact them by phone, by social media, by cell phone? How did you get in touch with them?
Yeah, so this was a phone survey, sort of a typical survey methodology, in that we had a list from the national surveying firm, not necessarily, you know, any partisan composition, just trying to get a random sample of people throughout the state. We had a list of landlines as well as cell phones, and used a combination of those in formulating the survey.
And so, did you get as many young people as you got older people? Because older people tend to use landlines, younger people tend to use cell phones.
Yeah, so this is a big problem in polling in general, in that when you are conducting a poll, oftentimes it's more difficult to contact younger people. Certain segments of the population tend to be a little less likely to answer calls in general. Mm. I think with the poll that we conducted, we got a pretty good sample that's representative of the state in terms of racial composition and age, income, and partisanship and other factors.
So earlier in the hour, we heard from some teachers about how Act 10's effect on the state has affected them. This poll asked participants about Act 10 and the effects on students and educators. Tell us what people said.
Yeah, so you look at the Marquette poll results from earlier this week, and you know there seems to be a little bit of soft support for Act 10, and I think our poll kind of maybe goes some way in explaining why that's the case. We found that a large percentage of independent voters and obviously a large percentage of Democrats in our poll thought that Act 10 had a negative impact on teachers, and pluralities, or you know, over 40% tended to think that Act 10 had a negative impact on students. Mm. This is, you know, from the perspective of those that are supporters of Act 10, like the governor and folks of that nature. It's kind of interesting in that some of the existing research that's out there tends to show more neutral or, you know, even positive effects in some ways. So there's a study out of Stanford University that showed, you know, Act 10 had allowed teachers to move to school districts that, you know, offer better pay packages, and better teachers were gravitating towards those districts. There's research that we conducted last year that showed, even though obviously pension benefits had declined since Act 10's passage, salaries still tended to be on par with neighboring states. So this suggests, from the perspective of those that are advocates for Act 10 or supporters of Act 10, that there's a little bit of room for reteaching or going out there and explaining these effects again.
And yet Molly Beck from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just told us that teachers had to pay more out of their salary for their pensions and for their insurance, and that may be why they don't think that it was a good deal for them.
That is true, and that was, you know, obviously one of the, maybe a feature of Act 10 to some extent. So it's not entirely, you know, it's not irrational to think that Act 10 may have, you can make the case that there may have been a negative effect on pension benefits, but it's sort of more ambiguous in terms of salary and things of that nature.
I want to go back to choice, to ESAs and school vouchers and what have you. Does this money all come out of the general fund that also funds public school education, or is there a separate fund for these kinds of schools?
So it, in some sense, comes out of the general fund. Schools have their state aid reduced by the voucher amount. Now, it's important to note that the voucher amount is significantly less than the spending that goes per student to public schools when you combine state and local funding. So one of the things that was in our poll, one of the questions that we asked was, are people aware of how much both we're spending on public schools on average as well as voucher schools on average? Our statewide average for public schools is about $10,400 per student, whereas the voucher program is $7,300 for K through 8 and then $7,800 for 9 through 12. So one of the results of that is, even though the overall, you know, aggregate funding for the public school system is reduced by the by increasing number of vouchers, the amount that the schools have per student actually goes up, at least in the short term, over 2 or 3 years.
Explain that to me. So it costs $7,800, around $7,800, to send students to a different school using the voucher program. It costs more to send them to public school.
That's right. And because the district is still able to count those students in their enrollment counts, the district receives a portion of that revenue, at least in the short term. So they're able to count that student at least partially for up to 3 years. So per student, they end up with more money per student in the public schools over that 3 year period, giving them time to adjust to the reduction in enrollment.
And people take their vouchers and often go to private schools, that they take that money to go to private schools, or they keep it in the public school system.
That's right. In the way the Wisconsin parental choice programs, all three of them work. So we have three programs, the Milwaukee program, a program in Racine, and a statewide program. Those latter two are much newer. Those are programs that are used to use the voucher to go to a private school.
So is the private school, we're going to talk about this actually. We're going to take a break and then, we've got 2 minutes, I'm told. A private school, if I get $7,800 per kid, is that going to pay for my private school for a year, or am I going to have to shell out more?
So one of the features of the programs in Wisconsin is that the private schools are not allowed to overtop the voucher. If you are using the voucher program or a school that takes the voucher, you have to accept that as the entirety of tuition. Now, if you talk to private schools throughout the state, they'll say, you know, this funding isn't necessarily sufficient to cover the cost of education. That's one of the reasons you'll often hear that folks would like to see more equality between the voucher amount and public school funding. And because these schools often have to go out and raise significant amounts of money to cover the difference, but they're not allowed to go to the parents to ask for that money.
We are talking to Will Flanders about a new poll that he conducted on school choice and school choice itself and how it works. Flanders is the research director at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We're going to dig into the issues surrounding this poll in a moment. I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Education is a big concern among Wisconsin voters. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which advocates for school choice, released a poll this week outlining some of the concerns that people in our state have. Our guest this morning is Will Flanders, the research director at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We also are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Will, you asked people in this poll about their knowledge of K-12 spending, which you just talked about. Did you see people change their mind when you told them that that we spend $10,000 per pupil? Do people think that was different from what they expected?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what we saw is that first we asked people, what do you think we spend? And what we saw is that 82% of people in our poll, so the vast majority across the board, really, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, 82% of people underestimated the amount that we spend. They tended to fall within the $4,000 to $8,000 range, I would say. Ah. And when we actually told people, we randomized in sort of an experimental way, half of the people to hear the true amount of funding, and then asked them whether they thought that amount was too much, just right, or too little. The people that we told the actual amount of funding to were much more likely to say that amount was just right or too much than the people that didn't hear the amount. So that suggests that there is a lack of awareness of the amount of K-12 spending that we have in this state, and that that number is meaningful to people. You know, $10,400 per student actually sounds like a significant amount of spending when people are actually made aware of it.
So was there any perspective in this poll? I mean, I know New Jersey and Massachusetts, they have about $18,000 to $20,000 spent per pupil. And they have the best education systems in the country. And Nevada does actually spend $5,000 per pupil, and it constantly comes in last in the country. So
sure.
did they have any perspective when you were talking about this number?
So we didn't provide the overall perspective. In terms of where Wisconsin ranks, we tend to be in the top half of spending, maybe in the 20s. So we're not at the very high end like those states like New York and New Jersey, nor are we at the very low end. I think Nevada may actually be the lowest spending in the country, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
I think it's important to note that a lot of the existing research tends to show that there's sort of diminishing returns over a certain amount of spending. So yes, there are some of the good performing states that are up there with the high levels of spending, but once you cross the $10,000 to $11,000 threshold, the sort of bang for the buck tends to decline to some extent. Now there may be states that are spending too low. We're not trying to say that there's not a level of spending that's insufficient, but there is also the idea that there's an amount of spending that is sufficient. And what's interesting from the poll results here is that folks seem to be sort of closing in on what the research shows is an appropriate amount to be spent per student.
We are talking about education this morning with Will Flanders. He's the research director at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Madeline from De Pere, welcome to the program.
Hello. First of all, I would like to say Tony Evers has blown himself out of the water for me by taking God's name in vain. But anyway... I do want to say that public school spending is very important because that's where our children learn to get along with each other, and that is important to me, and Governor Walker, it sounds like we're going to get a windfall from internet tax. Sales tax, mm-hmm. And right away the governor is talking about giving it back to the taxpayer instead of increasing our public school spending, where our children learn to get along together by playing in an orchestra together, by playing sports together, all those things that they have cut out.
Interesting. Thank you very much for that, Madeline. So public schools are important because it exposes children to other children who may not be like themselves and doing things that they wouldn't necessarily be doing if they were in a private school setting. What do you think of that, Will?
So I'll make a couple points. First of all, we're not an organization that advocates, solely for private schools. What we tend to support is good schools across the board. And we recognize the role that public schools can play in that. I might also note that, one of the things that we looked at in our poll was, you know, the fact that at least in oftentimes, you know, private schools or choice programs can promote things like diversity in that they provide students from a low-income background or maybe minority students who otherwise wouldn't have a chance to attend a private school the opportunity to be in that school. So I wouldn't necessarily say that, public schools are the only ways that we can promote diversity. The other thing I would say is that, you know, as you mentioned in your segment with Molly earlier, we are actually going to be at the record highest level of public school spending in the history of Wisconsin, even accounting for inflation next year. So I would definitely say that, it's not as if we've abandoned public schools or something of that nature. We're spending a significant amount, and that amount is even going to go up more, you know, in the years to come.
So say I am a parent, actually, and I want to maybe use a voucher or use an ESA to send my kids to school. May I make too much money to do that? Is there an income restriction here?
So currently we don't have an ESA program in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and I think one of the things I'd like to mention about our poll is that we saw that an ESA program is actually more popular than our traditional voucher and charter school programs. There was a lot of reticence on the part of the legislature to move forward with even a sort of pilot ESA program last legislative session. I think our poll results with 65% of voters and even almost 50% of Democrats being supporters of ESAs suggest there might be some room to move forward on that issue. In terms of our existing voucher programs, yes, there are income limits. We generally would like to see those raised. In Milwaukee, the income limit is 300% of the federal poverty line, and statewide, the income limit is 220% of the poverty line. Last year, it was 185%. They did raise it to 220 during the last legislative session.
So 300% of the poverty line for a family of four is about $70,000, right?
That's about right. Yeah,
am I guessing right? Yeah, okay.
I think that's about right.
We are talking about education this morning with Will Flanders, Research Director at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Jim from Appleton is joining us. Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I coordinate Fox City's Advocates for Public Education, a school advocacy group, and we track voucher spending. And what Mr. Flanders did not explain is that switching a student from public to a private school through a voucher is not an either-or situation on the public spending. It's a both-and. So if we have a class of 20 kids and we take one kid out and we now have 19 in that class, we still have in the public schools the cost of the teacher, the cost of the facility, the software they use, food service, transportation. The only thing we save is some of the books that student that use that we no longer have to purchase. So virtually all of the public costs of education for the voucher kid are still there, plus the public now pays the $7,000 plus for the voucher. So voucher spending is additive. It's not an either-or situation.
Thank you for that, Jim. So, Will, voucher spending actually adds money to spending or takes away money from public schools because they can't cut their costs.
So I think that's a common critique that we tend to hear. What we would say is that if we think of education as more of a marketplace, if we think that we should be, you know, moving more in a market direction where, the best schools rise to the fore, what we would say is that, you know, if we're thinking of it like another market, you know, for example, where we go grocery shopping. If you are a person who decides to shop now at Sendigs instead of, you know, Walmart, we don't necessarily think that Walmart should still be given the money that was previously provided to you going to Walmart, right? We accept that money no longer will go to, you know, the store that you previously shopped at. So we tend to envision an environment where, yes, you know, there's a marketplace and there's competition for resources. We think that tends to improve performance both for the existing public schools because they have an incentive to perform better, as well as for private schools because they want to recruit additional students. And, you know, beyond that, as I mentioned, the amount per student, in fact, in the short term, over at least the first 3 years, does go up per student, per remaining student for the public schools, even when a student leaves.
Okay, we have another Jim from Appleton. Jim, too, welcome to the program.
Hello. Has anybody ever done any research as to what it's saving the taxpayers to do the voucher? Because I've done a little number crunching myself, and it's like even if you factor in $10,400, like you said, but I've also read articles that the average cost in Wisconsin is $12,400. So I'm a little confused where people are getting their numbers from. But
Will, where's that number coming from?
So what we looked at was just the state and local spending. I think if you include – and the reason we didn't include federal spending is it's a little more difficult to see where some of that federal money goes, which schools they're going to. So we just think we're a little safer and more conservative to stick with state and local spending. And that's the number that you'll get off DPI's website in terms of the sum of state and local spending per student. But if you include federal spending in districts like Milwaukee, we'd actually be closer to like $15,000 per student.
So federal spending are things like – education for special needs kids, Title I kids, those kinds of things. Money that comes directly to the federal government that goes to those students.
That's right. And I think where Jim might be getting his number might be including, in terms of the public schools, some of those federal funds on the average at the state level. I think that might be where that $12,400 comes from.
We have time. Thank you very much, Jim, for that. We have time for one more call. Shannon from Kakauna, welcome to the program.
Hey. Good morning.
So what do you have to say?
Well, so we have five kids in public school right now. We have two at the elementary school and three at the high school. We know that they spend around $10,000 per student on the kids, but what we see is really a strong focus on turning out athletes for college scholarships. We see a huge push for, once a month, our high schoolers are going to what they call, advisory, where they go and speak with different college representatives about which colleges they're going to attend and how they're going to pay for college. And our kids aren't learning any actual life skills anymore in high school. They aren't learning anything about cooking. They aren't learning anything about finances. They aren't learning anything that they can actually use.
Good point, Shannon. We're getting to the end of the show, but that is an excellent point to end on. Will, you have about 10 seconds. Give me an answer to Shannon's question.
Yeah, well, I think Shannon's kind of hit on why we are advocates for school choice. I think some folks may like the collection of services they're getting in their public school. Others may want a different collection of services that might be provided at a different school. Our poll kind of shows that people support things like ESAs that provide those options. And, I think that's a perfect explanation as to why we need diversity in the school options that people have.
Will Flanders, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
It's The Morning Show.